In June 2025, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld the power of the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force to issue binding recommendations governing which preventive services must be included in insurance coverage. But the court's reasoning in this case has created uncertainty about the future of the USPSTF and its recommendations. I'm Stephen Morrissey, managing editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and I'm talking with Nicholas Bagley, a professor of law at the University of Michigan School of Law. Professor Bagley has written a perspective article about Kennedy versus Braidwood management and its potential implications for preventive care. Professor Bagley, what role does the USPSTF play in the U.S. healthcare system, and how has its authority changed over time up to this point?
The Preventive Services Task Force originally was much like other expert advisory bodies that sit to offer their wisdom to government decision makers and to offer insight into guidelines that private practitioners might use and the like. So it has the imprimatur of the federal government because they've selected members to sit on it, but it had, at least for many years, no formal power. It was simply an advisory body, and its decisions could be ignored or taken on board as in private insurers saw fit, as individual physicians saw fit. In 2010, the Affordable Care Act changed that scheme a bit. The Affordable Care Act said, listen, we really want to nudge people toward high-quality preventive services. So to the extent that the USPSTF has given a preventive service an A or a B rating, when those are ratings that are reserved for preventive services that have been shown to have a high degree of efficacy, if those preventive services have an A or a B rating, insurers and employers have to cover them. They've got to make them available. And what's more, they've got to make them available at no cost sharing. So we can't ask patients to pay out of pocket for the preventive care. And the idea here was pretty natural and intuitive. The idea being that we don't want financial barriers to stand between patients and high quality preventive care. And that shift was lauded as a big sort of contributor to public health, a potentially very important part of the Affordable Care Act. It's been wildly popular across the political spectrum, but that change to make PSTF recommendations binding did create a potential constitutional problem.
So then what were the facts in this case, Kennedy v. Braidwood Management, and how did it end up before the Supreme Court?
So there were a number of plaintiffs in Texas, and the plaintiff who kind of has taken the lead in this case is the owner of a wellness clinic in Texas. And a bunch of these plaintiffs, including this owner, objected to the preventive services mandate, and they objected to it on a variety of different grounds. But the key ground for this particular wellness center was that the PSTF had mandated coverage of pre-exposure prophylaxis for HIV. These are drugs that prevent the transmission of HIV in sexually active adults. And you can understand that there were objections to making PrEP available for some religious people who believed that the PrEP coverage supported a lifestyle that they condemned and didn't want to support. So this lawsuit was originally really a religious liberty lawsuit, saying, if I don't want to cover PrEP, which I think fuels a gay lifestyle, I shouldn't have to. And the argument was really pitched in that language of religious liberty. But the challengers here didn't just make a religious liberty argument. They also made a structural constitutional argument. And that structural constitutional argument arises out of what's called the Appointments Clause. And this is probably not a clause of the Constitution that you've heard of before, but it turns out to be a really important key part of maintaining clear lines of authority within the federal government. And the Appointments Clause basically says that when you've got an officer of the United States, somebody who wields coercive power of the state, that person has got to be appointed in a particular way. They've got to be appointed either by the president with the advice and consent of the Senate, or if Congress says it's okay, they can be appointed by the head of a department. But that's really the only ways that we're going to think it's okay for officers to wield authority. We want to make sure that if somebody objects to the exercise of governmental power, we all know who to blame. And having a bunch of individual officers running around who aren't accountable to anybody, the founders thought that would be a bad idea. But the Appointments Clause says that people wielding government power, people who are officers of the United States, have to be appointed in a specific way. And the trouble was that PSTF members were not appointed by the head of a department, but they were wielding coercive power of the United States, because when they issued a recommendation, that recommendation bound insurers and employers. So the plaintiffs in this case used that as their kind of key constitutional argument. They said the PSTF is impermissibly wielding these powers because its members have not been appointed in the correct way.
And the court, I gather, agreed with them. What did the court then say about the authority of the Secretary of Health and Human Services?
The challengers here had a good run of it in the district court, the trial court, and then the Court of Appeals. They fared less well in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. So the U.S. Supreme Court said, look, we agree with you that the PSTF members are officers of the United States. Yep, that's right. And we agree with you that for a while, they were not appointed in the right way, which means they weren't appointed by the Secretary of Health and Human Services. They were appointed by a different officer. But they said, since then, the Secretary of Health and Human Services has done the appointing of the members of the USPSTF. He has gone back and said, I am going to reappoint these people, that now they are working subject to my authority. And the justices said, well, that makes them inferior officers. They answer to him, and he appointed them. And so therefore, their constitutional status is secure. Part of what informed the court's judgment on that front was the fact that Secretary Kennedy can wield pretty broad authority over the members of the task force. So the challengers here, this wellness clinic out of Texas, said, you can't trust the members of this PSTF because they don't really answer to the secretary. Yeah, okay, now he's appointed them, fine. But in the law, there are these provisions that say that they should be as independent as possible from political supervision. There is not clear authority to direct them to behave in ways that the secretary commands them to do. Therefore, they're actually not inferior officers, they're principal officers. They're the kinds of officers who can only be appointed by the president with the advice and consent of the Senate. And the U.S. Supreme Court said, no, that's a bridge too far. These are not principal officers. These aren't like the head of major departments of the United States. They're members of a task force that have an important job, but they can certainly be appointed by the secretary, who has a lot of control over that body. And that's really the key takeaway from the decision is, on the one hand, it sustained and a really important part of the Affordable Care Act. On the other hand, it did so by clarifying that Secretary Kennedy, who is really not a fan of the Affordable Care Act and has very idiosyncratic views about medical evidence and science, they said that he is the one who really has the whip hand when it comes to the PSTF.
You say in your perspective article that the case is now going to go back to lower courts for further proceedings, and that some important questions remain unresolved. What are those questions?
So remember that I said that the Supreme Court held that the PSTF members can properly be appointed by the Secretary of Health and Human Services. And he's done that. He's now approved them, and he appointed them in the early 2020s, right, under the Biden administration going forward. So all of the recommendations of the PSTF done after all its members were reappointed, all of those recommendations are constitutionally secure. All of the recommendations that PSTF made prior to 2010, when the Affordable Care Act was adopted, those recommendations are secure. Those can be binding because Congress in 2010 chose to adopt them. But that leaves an open question about the vitality and bindingness of recommendations issued in that interim period. That's one big hanging issue that's going to have to be resolved. The secretary has said, well, I've ratified those prior decisions, and the challengers have said, that ratification is legally impermissible, and we're going to have to fight about that. The other big hanging question, this is something that folk have forgotten about the case, but when it was brought, it wasn't just Braidwood challenging the Preventive Services Task Force. It was also a bunch of other plaintiffs challenging other parts of the Affordable Care Act's preventive services mandate. So there are two other bodies that also issue binding recommendations under the ACA. One is the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. It's gotten a lot of attention recently. And ACIP's recommendations were challenged for the same basic reason. And the lower courts brushed aside the appointments clause problems, but left open the possibility that the ratification that the secretary has done is impermissible. By the same token, there's another body, the Health Resources and Services Administration, that is in charge of preventive services for maternal health. And they have adopted a recommendation saying that birth control must be covered at zero cost to all women. And that, too, is under a cloud because of the Braidwood decision. Again, there's been a ratification of that decision, but that ratification is in dispute. So we could get further proceedings, not only about PSTF recommendations, but also about contraception, which is obviously a hot-button political issue, and vaccination, which under Secretary Kennedy has become a real center of national debate. So I don't expect this case is over. We're going to see some fireworks before it ends.
Finally, what do you see as the implications of the task force's recommendations becoming increasingly politicized? How might and expansion of executive control affect the uptake of preventive services?
Well, it's hard to know. I want to be upfront about that. And it's hard to know because, of course, right now we've got Secretary Kennedy in charge of HHS, but he won't be there forever. And it's hard to predict the future when it comes to future occupants of his office. But what we can say for sure is that Secretary Kennedy's control over this body gives him potential authority to tinker with some past recommendations and potentially to force or coerce the adoption of others. So Secretary Kennedy, there's been a Wall Street Journal report to indicate that he's already decided to dismiss all of the existing members of the Preventive Services Task Force, ostensibly because they are too woke. If he follows through on that threat and then replaces the members of the Preventive Services Task Force, well, he's likely to replace them with people who are sympathetic to his Make America Healthy Again agenda. Now, maybe the MAHA movement is going to be sympathetic to most or all of the preventive services mandates that are on the books. After all, they're really into preventive services, right? This is actually a big part of the MAHA movement, is trying to make it people don't get sick in the first place. So in that sense, their objectives are aligned. But especially when it comes to sexual health, obviously the conservatives have a view about the provision of, say, PrEP that may be out of step with where the experts were in previous years. If that's true, you could imagine that Secretary Kennedy would be open to the possibility of appointing people who are opposed to the PrEP mandate and who might be inclined to undo it. If he were to do that, obviously that would have huge implications for the spread of HIV in high-risk populations. You could imagine a bunch of appointees who, frankly, weren't up to snuff and made very strange recommendations based on an idiosyncratic or a bad read of available evidence. You could easily imagine a task force that was too inclined to give high ratings to preventive services where there's a bad evidence base, thinking, again, that preventive services are really important and not being cognizant of the risk of preventive services that don't do much good, that inflate healthcare costs needlessly, or that actually identify problems that didn't need to be treated and shouldn't have been treated, right? You can overdiagnose through preventive care at the same time that you can underdiagnose if you don't get it. You could also imagine Secretary Kennedy leaning on the task force to adopt unusual forms of preventive care that really haven't gotten any scientific support at all. So he testified in front of Congress about a month ago saying that he was looking into how to make wearables available free of charge to people. And by wearables, he doesn't just mean your Fitbit. He also means these new glucose blood monitors that are coming online and that some worried well non-diabetics are using to keep an eye on their blood glucose levels. Most physicians think that there's no reason for otherwise healthy people to have a blood glucose monitor and think it's very unlikely that such a monitor is going to actually lead to material improvements in health. But it would definitely increase healthcare costs for everybody if blood glucose monitors became paid for by everybody's insurers and their employers. So I think that's the risk. It's not the same kinds of risks, I think, posed by the secretary's control over ACIP. I think there, the public health risks are more immediate and more dire, but especially over time, I do worry about a body that was designed to offer and channel the best expert advice from medical professionals being subverted by a strange and idiosyncratic movement that in important respects is hostile to medical professionals.
Thank you, Professor Bagley.